Hi, I'm Marion McPartlin. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Lalo Schifrin. He's truly a Renaissance man of music, from his brilliant piano playing to his many compositions and arrangements for TV, films, concerts with symphony orchestra, and now the wonderful Jazz Meets the Symphony recordings, which are creating such a stir, such a wave of attention. Lalo, I'm so glad you could come and be on Piano Jazz. I really wasn't aware that you had done all those movies and TV things. I mean, that's a lifetime of work. You must have been doing that for years.
Yes, I did quite a lot. When I left New York, that was about 30-something years ago, I moved to California, and I went to only do two movies, and I finally stayed there.
Well, of course, the thing that is, I guess, follows you everywhere is Mission Impossible.
Yes.
And that's such a...
It keeps coming back.
I'll bet it does. But you know, I'll have to back up a little bit because I guess not everybody knows that you're from Argentina, and I'm sure you had a musical background in your family when you... I mean, it's interesting how you got into jazz. There wasn't that much years ago, was there?
No, my father was a concertmaster. His name was Luis Schifrin. He was the concertmaster of the Buenos Aires Philharmonic. And his brother, Roberto Schifrin, was the first cello. So it was a family of musicians. And from my mother's side also, they're all classical musicians. And when I discovered in high school the first jazz record that drew my attention, Louis Armstrong, Fats Waller, Big Spiderbeck, that was a kind of conversion, and I became obsessed with this kind of music. And my father said, "This is no music. If you cannot write it or read it, it's no music." But I knew that it was music, and I kept at it. And there was a new conversion when I heard for the first time Charlie Parker. I remember the record that it was Billy's Bounce.
Oh, yeah.
That completely... I was already into jazz, and I... Duke Ellington became one of my idols. I remember that Black, Brown, and Beige.
Yes.
See, that's the beginning of the influence on jazz meets the symphony, in a way. Long, extended compositions. And I listened to that, I don't know, I think I destroyed the record. Those days there were 78s. You know, and
yeah.
I destroyed the record. And it was not easy to get records in Argentina or jazz.
You know, before we go any further, I'd love to hear you play something.
Okay.
Could we come back up to present day? One of the many movie things that you wrote, you were telling me.
Yes, there's a movie that I did with Paul Newman called Cool Hand Luke, and the theme, which was called, it's called Down Here on the Ground, it became a kind of cult jazz theme because Wes Montgomery did an album called Down Here on the Ground.
That's where
he
a great
plays
title.
That. And many of the great Oscar Peterson and George Benson and several people have done it, some of the greatest.
Love so to hear you do it.
I'm going to do it.
Okay. Done movies, it seems, with everybody. I mean, you did Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yes.
Dirty Harry.
Yes, oh, I did many movies with Clint Eastwood, about 10.
Goodness, Jacques Cousteau.
Oh yes, that was for television, one of the first Jacques Cousteau shows. I mean, actually, the first one. It was a two-hour movie.
Because I love that guy.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. He was very, very brilliant.
And the guy that was, I guess, the producer was David Wolper.
Yes, I did a lot of shows for him.
He's done some great things I'm really interested in.
The Making of the President in 1964.
Yeah.
The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Just things.
Yeah.
but it was fun. It was fun. I remember, you know, I have a funny thing to tell you about that. The first time that I worked for Wolper, there was a producer there who was doing a show called The Way Out Man. It was about the late, at that time, in the early 60s, the latest achievements of science. And they needed a very intellectual kind of atonal avant-garde music. And so the head of the music department of Wolper Production was Elmer Bernstein, the composer.
Oh, yes. Famous
so,
name.
The one who wrote The Magnificent Seven and so many. And he couldn't do this show because he was busy doing a movie. And they asked him to recommend somebody, and he recommended me. And the producer said, no, but he's a jazz musician. He cannot do this. Oh, no, he has a training in classical music, too. No, but he played with Dizzy Gillespie. I hear the jazz radio station. He plays good jazz, but he cannot do it. So finally, Elmer convinced him that I could do it. And when we met, he was very reluctant, you know. I mean, finally, when he heard what I did the day of the scoring, obviously he... And after that, I started a relationship with Wolper Productions. I did many, many shows for them. Yes.
Yeah, boy. Anyway, I want to hear you play more. What can you play, another solo?
Well, maybe one of the things I've been doing in Jazz Meets the Symphony, of course I don't have the symphony, but at least I can do the theme, dedicated to Ciano Pozzo, who was the great conga drummer who collaborated with Dizzy Gillespie and actually the marriage of Afro-Cuban music that happened in the late 40s and early 50s. So I'm going to play now a piece called Ciano.
Okay. Did you meet Dizzy? Was it when he came to Argentina? Was that the first time you met Dizzy?
Yes, he came when he did the tour, the State Department tour with all the big all-star band. Phil Woods was in the band. Quincy Jones was playing four trumpet. I mean, Frank Rehak, he had a... Benny Golson was in the band, Melba Liston.
My goodness.
He went all over the world. He went to Pakistan. He went to... As a matter of fact, he did an album called Dizzy in Greece, which is the repertoire he played in that tour. And we were lucky in Buenos Aires because I had arrived from France, back from my studies at the conservatory, and I put together a big band myself. I wrote the charge And the style of the band was between Dizzy's, believe it or not, because he was one of my idols, and Basie.
Boy, you've got the best of both worlds.
Yeah. in a way, it was a miracle that he came at the end of that year. I was playing concerts, and I was invited also to do television and radio with the band. I got a lot of visibility. And the owner of a nightclub decided to do a reception for Dizzy's band and asked me to play for them. And I said, of course, I'll play. And it was after the concert. It started at midnight or 1 o'clock. And Dizzy, after he heard, of course, I was conducting from the piano, so he came to me and said, did you write all these charts? And I said, yes. How would you like to come to the United States? And I thought, I was shocked. And I said, wait a second. I mean, maybe they call him Dizzy for some other reasons.
You thought he wasn't and serious.
But no, the next day he told me to go to the hotel and we talked and the whole thing finalized, and that's why I'm here today.
Isn't it amazing? And all these things that have happened really come from perhaps that meeting and the fact that you were so into that music.
Yes, well, he was very, very inspiring, and I think that the legacy he left also a responsibility not only to continue playing his music, but also to continue extending his ideas.
That's true. Hey, let's just do another duet.
All right.
I'm getting excited. I would love to try some kind of blues thing, like that Milt Jackson tune, Stonewall.
Stonewall, yes.
Can we do that?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. The full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.